Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Minutes after the hour, and welcome to your Tuesday, January the 9th. What an interesting conversation I had in the last hour with Todd Nettleton from Voice of the Martyrs. I've been thinking about that and feeling as a U.S. Christian that I don't deal with much persecution. I sometimes feel a little bit of pushback here and there, but for the most part, I do not go through that level of persecution. There is a new report highlighting the countries where persecution and attacks on Christians is expected to increase. And the country is they're most concerned about is China, India, and Nigeria. The report from the UK-based group Release International says China is a key country of concern this year. They said that Christians could face even more restriction there after Christmas items have been banned in some districts, and China is expected to impose more restrictions next month where the communist country takes control of some places of worship. In Steubenville, in Jefferson County, Ohio, two Steubenville, Ohio churches are starting an annual event to bless the waters of the Ohio River. St. Nicholas Orthodox Church and Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church met for the first time Sunday at the Steubenville Marina to pray a blessing over the river. Church officials say it's customary to bless water in remembrance of Jesus' baptism in the Jordan River. They said that they're hoping to make this a January tradition among many Orthodox churches. All right, we've got Dr. David Stevens with us on our studio line, so we're going to talk to him about the cold and flu season, among other things, something I'm very interested in right now. So I'm getting free doctor advice in just a few minutes. So stay tuned. It's 6 minutes after the hour. I'll be back with Dr. David Stevens. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Dr. David Stevens is a regular guest and friend. He's a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, and we are in the cold and flu season, and the doctor is in. David, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you today?
Well, it's Bill, and I'm better than ever.
Oh, hey, Bill. Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. You talk to a lot of people. I'm letting you off the hook.
I did.
It is cold and flu season.
Yesterday.
Yeah. It is cold and flu season, and here in Minnesota, for some reason, it gets to be like 11 below zero, and you get chilled going out because you can't help it, and then you seem to never be able to warm up, and that's how I actually started what I consider my 10-day cold.
Well, there's a lot of flu going around this year. The Center for Disease Control has been very concerned. In fact, some groups are reporting they think the flu vaccine just hasn't been effective this year, maybe 10 to 30% effective, where normally 60, 70% effective. So that's really contributed to the actual flu. And then there's a lot of other viruses, cold viruses and other things going around. Part of that is because we live with heating systems and closed areas and then just contagiousness from other people. Flu in particular is very contagious.
Okay, maybe just talk about the difference between the cold and the flu.
Well, a cold is an upper respiratory tract infection. Flu is more systemic. In other words, you get a lot of muscle or body aches. That's probably the best differential. You have fever, cough, sore throat like you would sometimes with a cold or another type of infection. But the body aches, the headache, the profound fatigue usually comes along with the flu, and the flu lasts longer and can be much more serious, especially in people at high risk, people over the age of 65, young children, people with chronic illnesses. It can turn into a pneumonia and actually be fatal. And hospitals in our area are just full of patients this year with flu complications, and they're putting this as one of the worst flu seasons that we've had in a good number of years.
If you get the flu, David, do you get treated with antibiotics?
You don't. It's a virus, but there is an antiviral drug that can shorten your course and decrease complications called Tamiflu. You have to start that within 48 hours of getting your symptoms. And we can test for the flu now in the office with a simple test to figure out whether people have it or not. I think most people don't know is you actually can be contagious with the flu before you actually have symptoms. A day earlier than the symptoms start, you can actually pass it on to other people. And that's mainly done through coughing and small little respiratory droplets that they go into the air, even when you're speaking. Coughs can be contagious within about 6 feet of the person coughing. So one thing to minimize this is contagiousness is when people start feeling sick and have the flu, they should stay at home and not be around other people until a day after their fever goes away, their contagiousness stops. Contagiousness can go on for 4 or 5 days after you start having symptoms. So that's one way to protect your cohorts. And secondly, be very careful to cover your mouth when sneezing. Hand washing, things like that can really help decrease this, especially in environments where people are working together and it's easy to get diseases from each other.
It seems like you can almost pinpoint the second it comes on. Does that sound like the flu?
The flu hits hard, and when it does, you often with just overwhelming fatigue and achiness and headache and just feeling lousy, whereas colds and things tend to come on a little bit slower, and they're mainly upper respiratory without the other symptoms in your body. So that's one way you can differentiate it. But if you're not sure, the best thing to do is to get an appointment or go to a an outpatient clinic somewhere and get tested, and then you can start on Tamiflu. Though in some areas like California, they've actually been running out of the antiviral medicine. So many people are coming in with the flu, and they're trying to reserve it for patients that are at greater risk. Up in Chicago, they're actually limiting visitation in the hospitals, concerned about people bringing flu into hospital situations and passing it to very sick patients. So it's a pretty serious year, and it's something to pay attention to and work at preventing getting it yourself or passing it on to others if you do have it.
Mm-hmm. If you start to feel a little lousy, isn't the first inclination to stop at the drugstore on the way home and try to pick up some over-the-counter stuff? And is that stuff helpful? Is it a good idea to get some of that stuff in your system?
Yeah, it doesn't make it go away any sooner, but it makes you feel better, and that's just symptom management with a decongestant or a antihistamine or some Tylenol or Motrin or something like that to decrease the pains and the aches and the symptoms and the runny nose and all the rest of it. And that's helpful. It doesn't make it go away any quicker, but you'll feel a little bit better. The main thing is drink plenty of fluids and get lots of rest. Your body's immune system is fighting viruses. Most people don't understand that viruses actually penetrate into the cells of your body and take over the machinery there and make new viral particles. And your immune system has to attack and stop that. And that's why rest helps. When you're getting lots of rest and some sleep, if at all possible, then your body fights back and gets you over it much quicker.
Mm-hmm. And then once you start feeling a little bit better, isn't it important to maybe even introduce the idea of a little bit of exercise as well? Because doesn't exercise help stimulate your anti-immunity system and all that?
Yeah, it in moderation as you're beginning to feel better. The thing you see people do is try to get back to the normal activities too quickly. And flu can go on for a week or two if you really got the flu. Colds usually aren't that long, but flu can be extensive. And being careful if you've got it, especially if you have any risk factors like diabetes or heart failure or you're over age 65 or what, if your cough gets worse, if you start bringing up sputum, then you definitely need to be seeing your doctor, because this can go into a pneumonia and can be life-threatening. Flu is not innocuous. I was actually listening to a tape from my grandfather, and he was talking about his childhood. There was a huge flu epidemic in 1917, 1980 that took mainly young people's lives. And he lost his mom and two of his brothers from that flu epidemic. And of course, back then, the medical care isn't what it is today. But flu can be a serious disease, and people die from it every year.
Wow. All right, David, let me take a break. When I come back, I want to ask you about some of the legalization of recreational marijuana in California. How is that a good thing? We'll take a short break. When we come back, more with Dr. David Stevens in just a minute. Good morning, 17 minutes after the hour. My distinguished guest on our studio line is Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. David, last Monday, California became the world's largest market for legalized recreational marijuana.
Yeah, and I'm very concerned about it. This whole idea that marijuana is innocuous is not true. And and of course, this isn't so much about the legalization as the commercialization. In other words, the state's looking to make a lot of tax money off of this. And when commercialization takes place, current users, they try to make them more frequent users, and new users are created and captured. So the product will sell. And we've seen that in Colorado, I mean, where the usage of marijuana has really increased. And more concerning, the potency of it. Most people think, oh, yeah, I remember when I was a kid, you know, in the 60s or whatever, friends were using it. It wasn't that bad a deal. Well, that had 1% concentration of tetrahydrocannabinol, the active substance that gives the high. Today, the average across the United States is 16%. And in Colorado, they've actually developed it that's 30%. And you can get it up to 95% tetrahydrocannabinol potency levels. So it's not your old-fashioned marijuana. This stuff is very potent. It can cause a lot of problems for people taking it.
It says that the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration considers marijuana a Schedule I drug, the same category as heroin.
Yeah, interestingly enough, there's some studies showing that it's harder to get someone who's a heavy marijuana user off their drug than it is to get a heroin user off theirs. Well, that's interesting. And that's why they've classified it. We know that this causes problems, especially for young people, decreases in IQ, what we call anti-motivational syndrome, difficulty concentrating, difficult with memory. Some of these effects can be permanent in heavy users. It makes the chance of getting schizophrenia appearing much worse for mothers who are pregnant. It causes low birth weight babies that have difficulties in learning. This is not an innocuous drug, and yet California and other states, seven other states that have done this in the District of Columbia, are saying this is not bad stuff. Let's just put it out there, and anybody over 21 can use this. It also impairs driving, and especially when combined with alcohol, which people often do, causes car accidents at six times the normal rate.
Traffic deaths in Colorado have doubled from over the last several years, and there's been a 35% increase in emergency room visits related to marijuana. So this is not without its issues.
Yeah, 800% for children. And what's going on is it's moving from smoking marijuana, which most people think that's what we're talking about, to edibles. And they're already, you know, big into this in California. In fact, even just with medical marijuana, license, you could go to these pot parties where chefs would infuse food with tetrahydrocannabinol, the active substance. And in Colorado, they take gummy bears and other types of candy, buy them in bulk, coat them with THC, the active substance, and a little bit of sugar, repackage them, make them look exactly almost like the original wrappers, except they're not. But kids and others think, oh, that's a Babe Ruth, or those are gummy bears, or whatever. And then they have extremely high levels of THC, in these candies, and one gummy bear, how many times do you eat one gummy bear, can have 40 to 200 milligrams of THC in it. The recommended dosage of THC does not take any more than 10 milligrams if you're using marijuana, and they have to 20 times that high. So, I mean, have you ever eaten one-fourth of a gummy bear? I never have. They do it in sodas. They do it in every kind of food you can imagine. And it makes it very dangerous for children who think, wow, that's a candy bar. I'm going to eat it. I see it here at the house or somebody else's house. And here it's got a huge amount of the active substance of marijuana in it.
Mm-hmm. And this probably comes as no surprise, but the head of the Bureau of Cannabis Control have already raised concerns that there's not enough licensed distributors already.
Yeah, there are 400 in California with temporary licenses, 1,800 who are waiting to get licenses. And this is a huge moneymaker. California is estimating that the marijuana market will be $5 billion by 2019, and they'll make $1 billion in taxes off of it. And that's one of the things that's driving states to do this. Of course, California's got huge financial issues, that this is another form of income. But a lot of people are saying in their studies they're going to spend that much or more trying to control this with car accidents and medical issues and all the rest of it and licensing procedures. So, and then there's the third thing. Other than edibles, there's concentrates. And what they've done, Bill, is that they – you know, normally use the little buds and tips of leaves off branches for smoking marijuana. Well, they got the rest of the plant there, and somebody got industrious and said, how can we get the THC out of the rest of the plant? And what they do is pack it into a pipe, and then they push through it pressurized butane or propane like you'd use for your grill out back. And what happens mm-hmm. is it pushes the THC out, and it drips out of the bottom and comes a concentrate that they can turn into rocks, and it's 95% THC. And what a pinhead size of that will knock a regular marijuana user on their back end. They put it into a vaping pipe, an electronic cigarette, which vaporizes it, and extremely high concentrations. And they're allowing that in California. You got to get a license to make it. But there's all new ways of trying to increase potency, make availability. In Denver, for example, in some of the poor areas of town, there's one marijuana shop for every 47 people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Unbelievable. David, I don't know if I should open this this can of worms right now with such little time left. But this is a story in Minnesota of the Department of Corrections. There's a class action lawsuit about inmates getting this Hep C drug, which can cost anywhere from $26,000 to $100,000 per patient. Now, should inmates be able to be demanding that kind of drug at that cost?
Yeah, hepatitis C is caused by mainly intravenous drug use, and it causes cirrhosis, hardening of the liver, and cancer, and so it's a bad disease, but it takes place over many years. The biggest problem, I think the fundamental problem here, Bill, is this. This medicine costs too much, like a lot of medicines do. It's $1,000 per pill. You take this pill for 12 weeks and you get about 95% cure rates. And of course, you want to help people, but how do you afford something like that? And we're seeing more and more of this in the country where drug companies are cornering the market on a drug and pushing the price through the ceiling. My wife takes an injection for rheumatoid arthritis. It's $1,000 a week. And you're thinking, how can we afford this? And I'm getting more to the point of saying we need government controls on the price of drugs because of the gouging that's taking place. It doesn't cost $1,000 a pill to make this stuff, and or even do the research required. And so what's happening is they're making money hand over fist. And that's one of the reasons people can't get this, including people that are working poor who don't have insurance. Do they have a constitutional right like these prisoners say they do to have this drug? We've got to do something with the high cost of drugs. It's just gotten ridiculous in the country, even for common drugs. Drug that I used in Africa as a missionary to treat worms and kids cost less than 2 cents a tablet. I ordered some for one of my staff members here. And you know how much it was in the United States? $200 a tablet. $200 a tablet. Yeah, and it's because it's not used much in this country, so some drug company got the control of it and said, okay, we're going to charge $200 a tablet for something that costs 2 cents. So that's one of the issues. This is a good drug and a miracle drug for hepatitis C, but they priced it out so high that gouging is just terrible.
Wow. Dr. David Stevens, thank you so much. Stay well, my friend, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, God bless.
God bless you. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back with Breakpoint. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's 28 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a little break for news, and then Ron Deal from Family Life Blended will be with us. Looking forward to our conversation with Ron at 20 minutes till the top of the hour. Andy Crouch is an author and editor of Christianity Today. He talks about how real flourishing can happen in our lives if we're willing to be vulnerable and take risks.
I'm thinking about vulnerability as the whole range of things we can do that open ourselves up to the possibility of loss. And that could be emotional loss, it could be financial loss, it could be even loss of reputation. And all those things actually are places where flourishing can happen, because I think the truth is, if you think about the most meaningful times in your life, it was a time when you both had some capacity to meaningfully act, and there was something really at stake. It wasn't just a game. It wasn't easy or safe, but there was some real risk happening. And I think that's where real life happens.
You want to hear that full interview from Andy Crouch? Go to myfaithradio.com, type in Andy Crouch, C-R-O-U-C-H, or type in Truth Flourishing. You should get there. We'll take a short break, and then Ron Deal's with us.
So, when and where does your teen open up and talk? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Just as you and I are more comfortable in certain settings, our kids also let down their guard when they feel safe. Have you figured out where they like to hang out? Parents, notice the times and locations that your teen is unplugged and willing to talk, and then seek out that venue for future conversations. Become a student of your teen's preferences. A cup of coffee, a favorite spot in town they like. Maybe they open up late at night. Mom, Dad, pay attention. A little effort on your part can go a long way to building a deep, long-lasting relationship with your child.
Strengthen your parenting muscles with Mark Gregston's free 2-week boot camp called Tough Guys and Drama Queens at freeparentingcourse.com.
Good morning, 21 minutes until the top of the hour. Always look forward to speaking to Ron Deal from Family Life Blended. Ron, good morning and Happy New Year.
Good morning to you. Happy New Year to you.
I still get to say that, at least to all of my guests, until they're on the show once in 2018. What about New Year's resolutions? What should we make these as a family?
Yeah, you know, I think we should, just at least to have an opportunity to have a dialogue about it. You know, I wouldn't invest too much in the idea that there's anything special about resolutions, but this is an opportunity for us to perhaps think about the future and commit ourselves to making some changes. And I have to say, Bill, since I got a new TV for Christmas, my New Year's resolution is 4K, as in 4K resolution.
I love it. I love it. Now, are you a little tired this morning from staying up and watching the football game last night?
I'm a little depressed, too. I was pulling for the other team.
Okay. You're pulling for Georgia.
Have some pity on me.
That.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you go to college?
Yeah, but I did stay up, and it was a good game.
Where did you go to college? Yeah.
You know, I went to school in a number of places. I went to a Christian school in Nebraska and then Oklahoma City, and got my graduate degree down in Texas. So a number of different places. Why do you ask?
I was just curious because, you know, you might have said, well, I went to Georgia. And I'm going, oh, no wonder you're depressed today.
Yeah, no, I didn't go to school there. I actually was just pulling for somebody else to win the championship besides Alabama.
All right. All right, let's go back to maybe New Year's resolutions that you should not make.
Yeah, you know, I think there are a couple that Scripture point out. Well, there's at least a couple. We could probably spend all day talking about the ones we should not make. But recently I was reading in Proverbs, and, you know, that's just such a great book to look at how to live. The wisdom there is amazing. And I was struck by a couple of things that the writer of Proverbs 30 says we should not do. And the first one is seek out wealth and riches. Now, you know, just the other day, I was hit twice in the morning before I could even get to work with the idea that I should play the Mega Ball jackpot because, you know, the numbers are growing and you could get rich quick. And that is so enticing to all of us, right? We sit around and we talk about what would you do if you won the jackpot? What would you do with the money? And we fantasize about all the good things we would do, but also all the selfish things that we would do. But here it is in Proverbs 30, don't seek wealth. Now, at the very same time, it says, it's essentially, it's a prayer, it's a request that the writer is making. He says, I don't want to be poor, but don't let me be wealthy either. And then he gives the reasons why. He said, if I'm poor, that might lead to stealing. You know, that might put me in a position where I think about doing something I shouldn't do. And if I'm rich, listen to this, if I'm rich, it might lead me to be self-sufficient and not needing of God. Literally, he says, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? There's a lot of wisdom in that. When you are self-sufficient, when you have everything you can provide for yourself in every way, you don't need from anybody else. You also don't need from God. And the temptation, the writer says, is that I feed myself and I don't look from to the Lord to feed me. You know, I think we should have an attitude this new year of God is my provider. He's going to give me enough, and I should be okay with enough and recognize that there is great wisdom in terms of fostering my relationship with God, my dependency on God, to have enough. I think Jesus called this daily bread. You know, give us this day our daily bread. Give us enough. God, you are my provider. So I think one resolution not to have this year is to get rich.
I find that fascinating. Everyone who goes and runs a small business or goes to their work every day, they're trying to increase their sales or trying to grow their company. And, you know, I sometimes hear companies that did $121 billion in sales last year, but next year we can do better. I'm going, really?
Yeah. You know, there's something to be said for giving your best and excellence and doing your work well. And hey, if the Lord blesses, but praying for riches, I don't think is a really smart thing to do. I really think we should pity people who have lots and lots of money. They have to have a discipline. Think about that for a minute. If you're a millionaire, billionaire, whatever the case, you have to discipline yourself to not be selfish, to not be self-reliant. You have to discipline yourself to figure out ways of giving back, to getting rid. You know, what do I do with this? And managing it well. Now, I know some people that are extremely wealthy and incredibly generous and constantly trying to figure out how to give away their wealth. I think those are very unique people. I don't want to be one of those people because I don't know that I have it. You know, honestly, I think I would rather be in a position of dependency on God than in a position where I'm constantly faced with how do I undo all that I have physically in this world.
But what about the people that when the bills come in, they're absolutely panicked?
And that's the other side of the prayer. I don't want to be poor.
The other side of the prayer. Yeah, I know.
You know, because then that leads to a different temptation. So I think the writer in Proverbs 30 is really striking that balance. You know, God, don't make me poor. Don't put me down at that end, but don't put me at the other end either. I just need to be in the middle because that keeps me in a healthy relationship, dependent, reliant, trusting on you. By the way, in the next verse or two, there's another resolution I think he says avoid. And that's interesting little conversation. He talks about the leech and how the leech is never satisfied. it just keeps saying to those around it, give, give, give me more, give me more. It's never satisfied. It never says enough. You know, one of the things that I think is related to this conversation we were just having is if I have a lot of money, I don't know that you ever say that's enough. I think rich people sometimes are tempted to just keep wanting more. And from a parenting standpoint, think about the application here. Like, if you just give your kids everything they ask for, will they ever stand up and say, Dad, that's enough. Thank you very much. I don't need anything else. No. They will just keep leeching off of you, wanting more and more and more. One of the best gifts we can give our children this new year is the answer, no, that's enough. You can do without. That's a lesson every one of us needs to know and understand.
Yeah, Brad, it's hard to be content because now you're a guy who's in the 4K TV club. So if you're ever going to see another 4K TV that's a little bit nicer than yours, you might want something better. We'll take a break when we come back. More with Ron Deal in just a minute. Welcome back. It's 11 minutes until the top of the hour. While we went to break, I continued my hard work of show prep, and Ron Deal looked at his 4K television. So it doesn't seem fair. It just does not seem fair.
Yeah,
but you probably
see that
all your work in advance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And by the way, I don't know if you heard it, but during the break, you know, you played Max Lucado's feature, and he was talking about want, the very thing we were talking about, how we could be imprisoned by the want for more and more and more. But contentment with what we have, trusting God as our provider, what I have is enough, that is a great discipline and a great wisdom for any person.
Yeah, it is a great reminder. All right, Ron, let's talk a bit about family suggestions or tips or things that we can do together in the new year. Ways that we can maybe model better behavior, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, and by the way, these suggestions come from a new book I have coming out in March, Daily Encouragement for the Smart Step Family. It's a book about blended families, devotional book, one-year devotional, but some of these have application to every family. And the first one is Act Your Best. Now, all of us had our mom at some point in time, Bill, I'm sure yours did, said, all right, young man, act your best. You know, that was kind of the threat that we give our kids when new people are coming over to the house, or you're going to meet the pastor for the first time. And, you know, there's something to that, right? I mean, act your best. Now, what I think is interesting is that there are certain places in life where we all naturally do that. If the way you treat a waitress in a restaurant, if you're meeting somebody for the first time, if it's a business relationship, or maybe it's just a neighbor and you're meeting them, everybody puts on their best behavior. You know, we want to make a good first impression. But sometimes we lose that act your best notion when we walk in the house of our own home and we get gripey or grumpy, or, you know, we bring out our worst I think there's reasons for that. You know, I mean, let's talk around that, because I've done that before. And I know one of the reasons that happens for me is I feel like I can finally relax and let down. And I let down my act your best notion. And these are the people who embrace me and love me the most. And so I can really be myself. And I think there's something good about being yourself. Yet, if I just feel like I don't have to try to be nice at all or put on any sort of kindness, then I'm acting my worst most of the time with those people that I love the most. So what would it be like if this year we just tried to put on this simple little adage and said, I'm going to try to act and treat my wife, my kids, the way I make a first impression, the way I treat the waitress at the restaurant, the way I respond to a neighbor when they ask me for a favor. That attitude and that demeanor that you have with those people, try to bring that home.
Well, Ron, how much of it is an act too? I mean, you can sometimes, you know, the person can be acting grumpy and, you know, a little bit not very nice. And then the phone rings and it's, hey, how's it going? Great to hear from you. It's like, Well, yeah, where's that guy in the house?
That's right. And that's absolutely, you know, disingenuous, to be honest. I mean, when we can switch gears like that. And again, there's a reason for this. Like, I expect a lot out of my children, out of my wife. And so sometimes when I'm hurt in a relationship with, you know, my wife, for example, I don't act my best. But here's the principle we're trying to grab. I still need to be responsible. I still need to be in charge of how I respond to her, even if she hurts my feelings. And I need to try to bring my best self to that circumstance. It doesn't give me permission to act my worst. Right? That's mm-hmm. never the case. And even if it is, I'll use the word phony, like that phone call that you answer and put on a smile, that's a bit phony. Mm-hmm. Sometimes mm-hmm. when we're trying to even act with kindness in our own home, we can be a little phony. That's not really what we feel genuinely, but we're trying. I still think there's value in it because it's me being responsible for me in this moment. Again, I don't have permission to act my worst. I may not be acting my best, but I'm trying to carry forward that attitude that says, I need to bring the best me into this situation, whatever it is. It's just a reminder. We can't act our best 24/7. Nobody can. We're human. Mm-hmm. We're going to fail. We're just trying to bring forward that simple notion of treat people with a basic kindness. Try to bring good things to the interaction in our home. Now, let's shift and let's do another one that I think is another tip for the new year for families, and that's share the real you. Now, this feels like, oh, wait a minute, you're just talking out of both sides of your mouth, Ron. You're saying the opposite thing. Well, not necessarily. I'm not saying share the real you in anger, share the real you that's unhappy or upset. No, I still think I have to be responsible for my anger. I'm saying be transparent. I'm saying in today's social media world, you know, if the way you do Facebook and Instagram is the way you do relationships, then they're going to be very phony relationships because everybody puts forward their best foot on Facebook. You know, you only post the pictures where everybody's smiling. Nobody posts the pictures mm-hmm. where somebody's angry with somebody, right? We always communicate the most positive things on social media. Well, that's not being honest and transparent to be, you know, I think sometimes we need to be real with if we're discouraged, if we're upset, if we're bothered by some, if we're anxious about something, I need to share that in a responsible way, but I need to be genuine with my kids, with my family, with my wife. Why? Because it is in my transparency that I invite them to move toward me. I invite them to understand what's going on within me. I still have to communicate it in a responsible way. I still have to act my best in that moment. But being real means our relationship is more genuine. They have an opportunity to learn. My kids are going to learn from me being real. If I'm being open about being anxious about my work or something that's going on in our lives, they get to see how faith influences my anxiety. They get to see me living faithfully in the midst of a hard situation. That's something, that's a teachable moment for kids. And I think this is powerful. I just think if we sanitize all of everything in life, then our kids don't ever learn how to deal with hard things. Our relationships mm-hmm. get sterile and distant. And we're not doing each other any favors. So if yeah. we put these two things together, Bill, we've got act your best. Just try to bring forward kindness and, you know, the attitude that says I'm going to bring my best me. And then at the same time, let's try to be genuine about what's going on the inside and share that with others. I think that fosters yeah. a depth to relationships.
Let's live our faith in real time, huh?
Yeah. Let's live it out in real yeah. time and share it with yeah. others around us.
Yeah. Ron, thanks so much for being on the show. Happy New Year once again, and enjoy your TV, and I'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
You bet. Yep. 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll be right back to close up the big show. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for being listeners and supporters of Faith Radio. I just love you all. It says in Matthew 6, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.